All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, back to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, as always, TJ Martineau. I'm actually not coming to you from my war room. My war room... Willow! One second. My puppy is deciding to jump up on my lap. You know what? We can have Willow here. This is going to be a quick podcast. I got to bang out before I head out to today's events. I'm not in my war room. I'm in my living room. My war room is covered with Alamo wargaming type stuff, because it is the what anniversary of the Battle of the Alamo. Spent all last night watching the uncut, I think theatrical version of the Alamo with John Wayne that had a whole bunch of scenes that were, some of them were probably gratuitous in terms of just not necessary. It was a bunch of like very Shakespearean soliloquy type stuff, particularly by Travis, who was not a Englishman. Why they picked Lawrence Harvey to play William Barrett Travis, I'll never know. I mean, he was great. As the character he played, he did a good job, but it was like, you know, some Shakespearean actor showed up on the set of an Alamo when he should have been this Southern guy. So, anyways. There is no title for this podcast right now. I'll probably figure it out by the time I'm done, because like I said, I got to get this podcast done and out, and honestly, it's freaking freezing. It is March and it should not be this cold. There should be a... If the government's going to pass a law that would actually be productive, it would be to make it illegal to be this cold at this time of the year. So I'm still trying to warm up. It doesn't help that my house faces north. So that what that means is the front of my house never truly gets warm, and by the time during summer that it finally starts, the sun starts to set, the front of my house feels like a sauna or a Turkish bath or whatever. As far as what I was going to talk about today, well, I got a new post over at the Old Glory Club, Substacking. If you are smart and you are listening to this podcast, I'm assuming you are an intelligent human being. You do have an IQ above a certain pointage level. And you will figure out where the Old Glory Club Substack is. Last time I checked, the search engines still work. They may need to be, they may need to have their oil changed or have a transmission swapped out, but you can still use them. And you can figure out where it is. But I wrote a new essay on the Alamo, which you can check out. I'm probably not going to talk a whole lot about the Alamo because I said in Substack, and I really don't feel the need to comment further on my podcast, because that would just completely ruin the point of you reading the article. I mean, I could get very poetic and read Travis's letter that he wrote while the Alamo was under siege, but it's not in the mood for it. It is 7 a.m. I'm still waking up. I'm drinking my tea. This is what's fascinating. This is completely just, we're tangenting for a few minutes, so just buckle your seatbelts, strap in. I'm amazed at how cheap black tea is. I can go to a Fred Meyer or a Walmart and buy 100 bags of black tea for $2. And yes, somebody's going to say, oh, it's not the good quality stuff. Sure, yeah. It's not as good a quality as Bigelow's or whatever that the seasonal stuff. And I do have that type of tea. But if you were just going to drink tea, you could go through 100 bags, or you could, for $4, you have 200 bags. For $6, you have almost a year's supply of tea if you had one bag of tea every single day for an entire year. So if you're trying to budget, which is what I'm assuming a lot of you are doing right now, trying to tighten the purse strings, or maybe you're not, tea is always a good way to go. And one of the advantages of tea is that it doesn't dehydrate you the way I can drink a lot of tea. I do drink a lot of tea, and I don't have the same jittery excitement that too much coffee or energy drinks give you. I was actually reading. Here's what we'll talk about. We'll talk about the American dream. I was reading an article the other day. Was it Investopedia? I will find the link, and yes, I will post the link in the podcast post on my website. There will be a link to. There'll be a link to the Old Glory Club. I'm going to help you there. This is how much I'm willing to help you. I'm going to post a link to my Old Glory Club Alamo article. I'm going to post a link to the Investopedia article that I read about the American dream being pretty much dead. And one of the things that amazed me is that it was talking about how last year was the worst year for house affordability, because this is when interest rates went up to like 7-something%, which was the highest since 2000. And it was talking about how the typical American dream, having a bunch of kids and living in your own home, is pretty much a dead objective. And to which I would throw this out there for people. I want to gather all the people who say, oh, these problems have always been here, and everything has always been the same, and nothing's new under the sun. Yeah, about that. How's that affordability going for you? To give perspective, I don't know what the interest rates were in 1985, 1986. I'm guessing they were around 7, 8%, maybe 9%. I know somebody who was making $32,000, $33,000 a year, and they bought a house for $70,000. Now, granted, it wasn't fully finished. The basement was not completed, but it was a $70,000 house. So he was able to buy a house that was twice the amount of his annual wages. And also this house, because I've been to it many moons ago, it had a massive backyard for kids. And it was in suburbia. It wasn't in some random dive part of, you know, where you have to have bars on your windows. That's never a good sign for real estate. If you're looking at homes on Redfin or Zillow or whatever, and you see bars on the windows, I don't want to recreate the Alamo while at my house. But yeah, this goes back to people who want to try to convince you that things have always, this very weird Orwellian mindset of, oh, things have always been this way. And people have been talking about the same problems, yes, but it's like people who talk about crime. Crime has gone up and down, but people talk about crime. That doesn't mean that it's been the same. The fact that people are still talking about the same. We've been talking about education for how many years? Education, demonstrably, is getting worse. No one who has an IQ above 50 is going to look me dead in the eye and say to me, TJ, kids back in 1910 weren't as educated as they are now. And do it with a sincere look on their face. I mean, those may be the same people who look you dead in the eye and say, hey, if you put this piece of cloth on your mouth or over your face, it's going to protect you from a virus. And if you stand precisely 6 feet apart, you won't get the virus. But if you stand 5 feet, 11 inches apart, then you're going to get the Wuhan. So yeah, the American dream in that regard is dead. Now, is that going to change? Well, if we keep importing people at the rate we're going, probably not. We're such a weird country. It's not even, I'm going to call it a country. We're such a weird economic opportunity zone. We're such a weird business where we have a complete shortage of housing, affordable housing. And yet the response is, well, we need to import more people because, you know, it's kind of like a guy who says, you know, people talk about how all these men aren't working and they're on welfare or disability or whatever. This is kind of like a dad who has a 40-year-old son at home and he goes, well, my son isn't working, so I need to just adopt more children. How about you kick your son out of your house and make him get a job? We need to have more immigrants come to the country because people aren't having any kids. Maybe you might want to figure out why they're not having kids. Well, you know, kids these days. Well, and what happens when people come to the country? Do they continue to have more kids? No, they end up having their 1.5 kids and then they live in their McMansion. And, you know, that's the new American dream. You know, and you got to wonder, what is the American dream now? I don't think that there's a dream anymore. I think that there's a delusion. There's an American delusion about being in the American denialism. There's not so much a dream as denialism. This state of denial over what is going on, over what's happening, and over why it's happening. Like, why are interest... First of all, let's just throw a few things out there. The government should not be setting interest rates. That should be set by the market. It's kind of like insurance rates if the government wasn't meddling in those. Insurance rates should be determined by the market and should be determined by the person in question. But our state banned the use of credit reports to set insurance rates. So now our insurance rates went up. So no, we shouldn't have interest rates that are at this point. But the reason they're there is to combat inflation because they printed up a whole bunch of, you know, money printer go brr in 2020. As if there wasn't going to be long-term consequences for any of this stuff. And it's not so much Schadenfreude or a weird sense of enjoyment over watching this, because it's just sad. Because I, it's for people who are long-time listeners. We appreciate the customer loyalty, even though you don't buy a product because my podcast is free. I live in my own house. Yes, I have a mortgage like almost everybody else on the freaking planet, but I live in my own house that I bought when interest rates were as low as they are. Interest rates will never be as low as they were when I bought my house. They will never be that low ever again. I couldn't afford my house. The monthly mortgage payment I could not afford if I bought my house for the same price with current interest rates. But it's not so much the American dream is about owning a house. You also owned a house around people the same. Just you had some commonality with the person next to you. I mean, my old neighborhood is full of people where you have a multimillionaire living next to a guy who bought his house in the 80s. And it shows. What exactly are they going to have in common with each other? Or some guy, some landlord bought, because I do know this was going on in Bellevue at least 10 years ago, is these foreign investors would buy the homes and then just pack them full of immigrants. I mean, they would rent out individual bedrooms. I mean, they turned them into freaking hotels. So it wasn't, the American dream wasn't just buying a house in the suburbs. It was also buying a house in the suburbs while you're surrounded by other people. Not just the same background, but the same like age group. Who wants to buy a home and raise a family when you're surrounded by the geriatric society? There's nothing wrong with having a few older people, but when everybody around you, all they're talking about is their health problems, that's kind of a downer, and believe me, because I can speak from experience, living in an area where everybody's talking about their cancer or their doctor visits or their medication or their pills or their latest hospital visit or their friend who's dying or somebody who's, you know, having to get screened for something, like that just wears you down. You know, you're not hearing about how somebody just got their first, you know, got to go drive their car for the first time, or they're going in into high school, or they're getting excited about, you know, what they're going to do when they get older or something like that. They're talking about the future in a positive way, not, oh, I'm just delaying time before I meet the Grim Reaper. There's actually an entire essay. I don't want to spoil it for people on the podcast because I really need to not talk about it and just write it. But there is a thought experiment that I want to write down. And just to give it kind of a teaser, it's a little bit comparable to the Free State Movement in New Hampshire, where a bunch of libertarian-minded people in mass moved to New Hampshire. And there was, I don't know what the movement looks like now. I haven't been up there. I've heard, you know, good and bad. But here's what you had. You had a bunch of people moving to an area for a specific common purpose. And so you guaranteed that you're going to be surrounded by people who think like you on a certain thing. Now, some people would argue, and I think that there's some merit to it, that merely having a political ideology of wanting to be left alone is not enough to have common, not enough to have any kind of meaningful. Of course, the train has come by. Give it a second. I have lived near trains for 7 years. One day, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, I will no longer live near a train. So you have to have more in common with people than just simply not basically saying, hey, I'll leave you alone if you leave me alone. That means you're not going to go kill each other. You're not going to violate each other's rights. But that doesn't mean you're going to go have them over for a barbecue and play cornhole game or, you know, break out a tabletop game and play, you know, whatever it is you play. You're not going to have them over on Sunday nights. You're not going to go take them out. You're not going to go on camping trips with these people necessarily. But I see that as being a potential solution to the whole "is the American dream dead" thing. Is that one of the problems is our society is so atomized that everybody acts as individuals devoid of context. And that's just not the way that people really behaved, especially in early American history, where families were, especially on the frontier, were pretty tight-knit. But because we have a all-powerful, omnipotent, omnipresent, mother-in-law-ish authoritarian government that wears the democratic democratic costume and LARPs as a democracy in that sense, people don't really need each other anymore in terms of long-term commitment. You know, people are committed the same way you're committed financially to your plumber. He does the plumbing job and then you pay him and the financial commitment is over. You're the same way you're financially committed to a mechanic. He repairs your car, you pay him, and the commitment's over on both sides. He's committed to working on your car, you're committed to paying him. It is a short-term commitment. As opposed to somebody that you have a long-term relationship with, and that person happens to know how to work on cars and is willing to help you out and do it, because you're also willing to help him out on stuff. But that also means that you have to maintain the relationship. It means that when there's a conflict, you have to get it resolved, because if it doesn't get resolved, the relationship is spoiled and he's not going to be there to work on your car anymore, and you're not going to be there to work on whatever it is that he's going to work on with you. But that's what I'm increasingly seeing more and more and more, is that people are eschewing long-term committed relationships of all kinds in favor of short-term commitments that are financial-based. Where you pay someone to do something, and as soon as it's over, your only obligation is money. So you don't have to be their friend. You don't have to have any social skills. You really don't have to have any kind of skills. And no, I'm not going to quote Napoleon Dynamite about girls only liking guys with skills. which I just did. That's what's going on, is people are just saying, you know what, I don't need somebody to do. It was interesting. Somebody made a good point. They made a good point. They said Social Security and all this government welfare destroys family ties, because back in the day, the elderly had to rely on the younger members of the family to provide for them and take care of them. So the older members of the family would move in into the same house, and they would basically be taken care of. And that's kind of what happened with some of my relatives who are older. They took care of the people I know now who are in their 70s, took care of older relatives back in the 50s. This was really before, you know, I'd say either. So it wasn't even so much a financial thing. It's just you're there to help them out. But that was the old way of doing things. Now these people move into senior living centers and have third worlders being paid minimum wage to take care of them. And we somehow call this progress. But again, it's them paying someone to do something that a relative used to do for free. But that also meant that you had to maintain a relationship with your family. You had to maintain a relationship with the younger members of the family. You had to maintain a relationship in which they are willing and able to take care of you, to take time out of their day, out of their life, to take care of you. Which doesn't happen really anymore. When the older members of the family are not able to take care of themselves, they get sent out to a senior living center, or they go there themselves because they don't want to be dependent on family members, because then you would actually have to treat them well. I mean, there's plenty of examples to give, but this is kind of where the American dream is. I think goes beyond owning. It's not just about owning a house. You can own a, there are plenty of places in the country where you can own a house, even if you work, and especially if you work online. The question is, do you really want to live in that neighborhood? Now, if you're acting on your own by yourself, that's a problem. But if there was, say, 30 of you who all decided to move to the same location for the same purpose, that would be a different thing, wouldn't it? You know, I think there was a group of people that kind of did something like that. You know, I kind of vaguely... Oh, yeah, that's right, the Pilgrims. You know, it's almost like reading and studying history gives you ideas for how to solve present problems. It's either going to be that, or people are going to... I think the biggest change that's going to need to occur is people are going to need to stop being in denial about what's going on. Stop pretending that things haven't changed over the last 30 years. I mean, I think that that's occurred with a lot of millennials, and especially the Zoomers, who are just, they realize they're never going to own a home. You, that may be true. And also going to live in some apartment and be resigned about it is not, for me, a solution either. Or a healthy response. It's, we need to figure out a way to circumvent this problem and think outside the box. The question is whether anybody's going to actually do it. Now, there may be people doing it, they just don't talk about it. Frankly, I can't blame them. I wouldn't talk about it. Why would I want the public at large, especially the my federal government, why would I want them to know that I've managed to bypass a system that is designed to make me fail? You know what's also kind of crazy is I was reading an article. This has to do with housing. My house is a century old. It has old growth wood in it. And I don't know if you've ever been in an old house and tried to hang a painting or a picture frame or something like that, but these walls are like castle walls. They're wooden plaster, meaning they have the studs all have this wood, like thicker than shims, across the entire wall, and then it's lathered with plaster. And I was reading an article about how somebody was saying, that the person was saying that buying old homes like the one I have is a better investment than buying a new home. Because he said the old home will last much longer. And by last longer, he means require fewer repairs or replacements. So, for example, my window frames are old growth wood. I replaced a few of them down in my basement because there was just, you know, they were getting old and we wanted new windows down there that were better able to block out the train noise. But the wood was still good. In fact, I ended up giving away a bunch of the stuff, the windows, to some friends because they're still in good condition. The wood still, I've saved all the wood because it's old growth wood. And the article I was reading, and no, I'm not going to put it in the show notes because I don't know which article it was. It was something I read somewhere, but I heard it from a window expert who was looking at my windows when I was potentially going to replace them until I found out it was going to cost tens of thousands of dollars. Not going to do that. His point was that the new homes, the wood used in new homes will not last. It's not durable, or it doesn't have the quality. And they were using a bunch of technical terms. But it just goes back to what I'm saying is that when people say, you know, it's like, yes, things were better. There was a funny meme about how a 1984 refrigerator is just like this eternal life form. And I was like, yeah, I have appliances that are a century old in my house. They still work. But God forbid a Bluetooth earpiece set lasts 6 months. I have 3 Bluetooth earpiece sets, headsets. They all lock, like one of the earpieces died on me within 6 months, all 3 of them. Now I use old-fashioned cord-based headphones. Because I don't need to sync it in with Bluetooth in order to use it. I just plug it in and start using it. I think the sad thing is, as far as the housing market is concerned, is you either got in by 2021 or you didn't. For most people. It was kind of like one of those closing doors from like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom or something like that. There was a window of opportunity, there was a time, the door has been sealed, the ladder's been pulled up. Because like my house equity has gone up despite interest rates doubling since I bought my house. I'm not sure what the future is going to look like. I just know that it, for people who got into the, especially in the Pacific Northwest region, especially in Western Washington where I live, it gives you options and power because there are other areas in the country where you can go take that equity and you can outright buy a house if you want to. So for people who got into the market when they had a chance, and what people say in realizing the dream, here's the sad part, guys. It's nowhere comparable to that house I was talking about where the guy bought it for 70 grand. I would trade, I'm trying to think of how to describe it.
that property is infinitely superior in terms of location, layout, the style. So there's just no comparison. So when people say, oh, you've achieved the American dream or something like that, it's like a dream. If you wanted to own a home, the dream has been achieved. The question is, what now for many people? And what if people who will never achieve that dream, what are they good? How are they going to respond? Are they going to say, well, I guess I'm going to live in an apartment my whole life? Or are they going to start basically trying to achieve the same lifestyle of the American dream without the house, where you have a sense of community with people that you have, you associate with, but you guys don't own homes? I'm not saying we're not even saying it's going to go mainstream. We're not even going to say it's going to be popular. I'm not saying anything of the sort. I'm just wondering. I'll give you an example. There was a woman I met years ago where she and her husband got tired of waiting to save up money for a house. So they took an old bus and they turned it into a house. They put a deep cycle battery in it. They put in a bathroom with a shower. They put in all this different stuff at like a bedroom. They put the living room in. They put all that stuff into this bus. And some people can say, well, that's just not that's not what I want. And the bus lifestyle, great. Try having kids. I can understand their point, but that's an example of people thinking outside the box. There's people who are building tiny homes. Again, all this stuff is, at an individual level, not very practical. But when you get 30, 40 people who are doing the same thing, now you've got an interesting situation. And you got to wonder, say, by the time the Zoomers are in their 30s, what is going to be the American dream? That's going to be a very interesting thing to find out. In 20 years, which are going to go by faster than I prefer, but what is the American dream going to look like? So on that note, got to head out. Thank you for listening to the New Adventures of the Mountain Pass podcast. This is your host, TJ Martinell, coming to you from my living room in my Fortress Americana in the heart of Cascadia. Signing off.